We're going to talk about Bhumandala, which is a feature of the cosmology of the Bhagavatam, of the Vedic literature of India. Mm-hmm. Basically, Bhumandala is described as a large disk about 4 billion miles in diameter. And it consists of a series of concentric islands and oceans. And the central island in Bhumandala is called Jambudvip. That's about 100,000 yojanas across. So Jambudvip is marked by a series of mountain ranges, including a Himalayan mountain range. These mountains, however, are quite a bit larger than the mountains of our experience. For example, the Himalayan mountains are about 80,000 miles high. And that's about, their height is about 10 times the diameter of the Earth, which is about 8,000 miles. So there's a natural question that arises. What is the relation between Bhumandala and Jambudvip and the Earth globe, this small 80,000 mile diameter globe that we're sitting on? Various ideas have been considered in relation to that. One basic concept that people have is that the Earth globe and Bhumandala are both physical objects in space. And if you have two physical objects in space, they must stand in relation to one another in some way. So the idea is there that Bhumandala is a large structure, as I briefly described, and the Earth globe is situated near the southern portion of Bhumandala, in an area called Bharat Varsha. Now, the southern part of Bhumandala is bordered on its northern side by a mountain chain, which is called the Himalayan Mountains. These are the 80,000-mile high mountains that I mentioned. So some people have thought, well, the Earth globe must be situated above Bharat Varsha in Jambudvip, next to these mountains, which are about 10 times the Earth diameter in height. So you can imagine a very small sphere next to these gigantic mountains. So that's one idea that has been presented. And of course, this does have some inherent problems. For example, if you stand and look up in the sky, let's say at night, you ought to be able to see these gigantic mountains, which after all are 10 times as big as the Earth. But we don't see that. Just to illustrate this problem, we have here a picture. It was made by an Indian gentleman named Bhadarayan Murthy back in the late 1970s. And in this picture you can see the Earth globe standing at the peak of a mountain which is connected to Bharat Varsha or Bharat Khanda. So this illustrates the concept. In some forms of this, there are other diagrams and drawings that you will see in which the mountain support is not there, and the Earth is just shown floating above the surface of Bharat Varsha. What I'd like to do in this short talk is give an alternative understanding of the relation between the Earth globe and Bhumandala. And to start, I want to quote from the Siddhanta Shiromani. This is an astronomical shastra from India dating back to 1100 AD. So I'm going to read something that is said about Jambudvip. So according to the Siddhanta Shiromani, most learned scholars have stated that Jambudvip embraces the whole northern hemisphere, laying to the north of the South Sea, and that the other six dvipas and the seven seas are all situated in the southern hemisphere. So I'd like to illustrate what is being said in this text. It is interesting, by the way, that the text begins with most learned astronomers. So the viewpoint that we're presenting here is not an insignificant one, but is one that many learned astronomers in India have accepted. So to illustrate the statement in the Siddhanta Shiromani. I want to show some pictures of a globe which was commissioned by the Maharaj Jai Singh of Jaipur. This globe shows the earth. Jambudweep is situated in the northern hemisphere on this globe. If you look at a map of Jambudweep in the plain, you'll see that Jambudweep is roughly circular. In the center of Jambudweep, there's an inverted cone called Mount Meru. There are six horizontal mountain chains, basically going from west to east. Three groups in the southern half of Jambudweep and three groups in the northern half. And there are two mountain chains which connect the two groups together. So these mountain chains are straight if you look at a map of Jambudweep in the plain. However, when you fold this planar diagram around the northern hemisphere of a globe, you find that the mountain chains bend. So they're all semicircular at this point. But you can see that the basic map of Jambudweep is located in the northern hemisphere of this globe. And that is what we found stated in the Siddhanta Shiromani. Now, this is true in detail. For example, the names of the different mountain chains are actually available. For example, we have a mountain chain here called the Himalayan Mountains. And we have, beyond that, the mountain chain which is called Himakuta. Beyond that, the mountain chain called Nishada. So basically, all of the different mountain chains of Bhumandala, or I should say of Jambudweep, are present. As you can see in this shot of the globe, we're looking at the region of Jambudweep called Bharatvarsha. And you can see here that there are many names that are familiar from India. For example, here's Delhi, here's Agra, over here is Prayag and Kashi, over here we find Jagannath. So this whole region here is Bharatvarsha, or India. And you can see if you go in the eastern direction, we have regions on the other side of this Himalayan mountain chain called Chin and Mahachin, which would be China. And then if we go in the western direction and cross over the Himalayan mountain chain, we have some Turistan, and finally Makka, which is actually Mecca. So this is the earth represented as Jambudweep, with the specific geography of Jambudweep, in which the earth is divided into mountains and intervening valleys called Varshas. Now, if you go below the equator is running across the center here. If you go below the equator, you see we have the Lavana Samudra, which is the ocean of salt. And then we have Plakshadweep is the first ring-shaped island of Bhumandala. Then we come to the Ikshu Samudra, the ocean of sugarcane juice, which is there in Bhumandala. Next, we come to Somalidweep, which is another of the dweepas of Bhumandala, and so forth. So basically, all of the features of Bhumandala are represented on this globe. The features of Jambudweep are shown in the northern hemisphere, and the seven oceans and remaining six dweepas are shown in the southern hemisphere. So the natural conclusion then is that this Earth globe is not conceived as a physical object separate from Bhumandala, which must be floating somewhere in relation to Bhumandala in space. Rather, this Earth globe is Bhumandala. In other words, we're not dealing with two different objects. The Earth globe is Bhumandala, or to be more precise, the Earth globe is an interpretation of Bhumandala. So that leaves us with two interpretations of one text. In the one interpretation, we have the Earth globe with the different markings of Bhumandala, and that therefore is Bhumandala. And in the other interpretation, we have the large disk with the different rings laid out in the disk, representing the oceans and islands. And in that representation, Jambudvipa is flat and shaped like a disk. So basically, we have here two interpretations of the same thing. Both of them are equally Bhumandala. And it's not that they are separate physical objects. So that is the basic point that we wanted to make concerning the relation between the Earth globe and Bhumandala. And there are many additional points that also can be made. For example, you can still raise the question that, all right, if we have these two different interpretations, and the Earth globe interpretation is said to have been accepted by most learned astronomers, according to the Siddhanta Shiromani, then what about the other interpretation in which you just directly accept the various distances of the mountains and the diameters of the rings and so forth in Bhumandala conceived of as a plane? So it turns out there are some interesting conclusions that can be drawn in this regard, although I don't have time here to go into great detail. But there is an ancient or medieval navigational device called an astrolabe. You may have heard of the astrolabe when reading about Columbus sailing across the ocean to America. So the astrolabe basically can tell you the location of any star or the sun or the moon relative to the Earth at any given time, and this is useful for navigation. But the way it works is, instead of trying to do this on the surface of an actual globe, the globe is transformed into a flat plane by a mathematical operation called a stereographic projection. And so the flat plane represents the Earth. What we see here in the Bhagavatam, we have the Earth represented as a globe, marked with different features that are familiar to us, and marked with a series of mountain ranges which aren't so familiar, but at least some of them are familiar. For example, you have the Himalayan mountains. So we have this globe, and we also have the plane of Bhumandala. And they stand in relation to one another in the same way that the disk of an astrolabe stands in relation to a spherical model of the Earth. Basically, one is a stereographic projection of the other. Now, there's a scholar named Randolph Cloetsley, who went into great detail in a study of the cosmology of the Vishnu Purana, which is very similar to the cosmology of the Bhagavatam. And he argues in great detail that Bhumandala corresponds to an astrolabe model. So, according to this understanding, then, the only thing we have here that is physical is the Earth itself, which is a globe, and which can be represented using stereographic projection as a flat disk. So, briefly in summary, if you look at the globe, this particular example of a globe from India was commissioned by Maharaj Jai Singh. There are other similar globes, including, for example, one that was made of brass and doubled as a container for small objects. So we see that the Earth globe basically is Bhumandala. Or you could say the understanding of the Earth corresponds to an interpretation of Bhumandala in the cosmology of the Bhagavatam. Yeah, well, what I did, to recap what I presented, first I introduced Bhumandala and Jambudvipa. And then I brought up the question of the Earth globe. If Bhumandala is a physical object and the Earth globe is a physical object, in space, then how do they stand in relation to each other? They have to have some relationship. And so one possibility is that the Earth globe is placed over Varsha in Jambudweep. And then we talk about this picture, which illustrates one way of doing that, in which the Earth is mounted on a mountain extending out of Bharatvarsha. Or you could do it without the mountain and just have it floating there. But in either case, you have a problem, because obviously you go out at night and look up in the sky,
you
don't see these Himalayan mountains that are much, much bigger than the Earth. So I then propose that there's a solution to this problem, and to introduce the solution, I quoted that text from the Siddhanta Shiromani, which basically says that according to most learned astronomers, Jambudweep is in the northern hemisphere of the Earth globe, and the remaining dweepas and oceans of Bhumandala are in the southern hemisphere. And then the basic point is that the Earth globe is Bhumandala. The Bhumandala is the Earth globe. It's not that it's a separate thing. So, in fact, according to the Siddhanta Shiromani, most learned astronomers accept this viewpoint. In fact, just to make an additional point, if you look in the beginning of the Siddhanta Shiromani, you'll find that the author, Bhaskaracharya, is criticizing the idea of Bhumandala as a plane. Yes, they take it that Bhumandala as a flat disk is a faulty understanding,
mm-hmm.
and that Bhumandala really is the Earth globe. Now, I don't think that's quite correct. There's a valid meaning to Bhumandala as a disk. And, in fact, there are several valid meanings, but one of them is that, basically, Bhumandala is the plate of an astrolabe model. And that's discussed in great detail by this scholar named Cloetzly. So, basically, then, the conclusion is that Bhumandala and the Earth globe are not two separate things. They're one and the same thing. And so there's no question of one floating in space next to the other. Yes, well, here we have a picture of Jambudweep in Bhumandala. You can see this is Jambudweep, and here we have the alternating oceans and islands of Bhumandala extending out to the horizon. And in the center here we have Mount Meru, or Sumeru, which is shaped like an inverted cone. Now here we have a map of Jambudweep seen as a circular island in Bhumandala. So this is the circle of Jambudweep. And we have these various mountain ranges, which here are shown as straight lines. Down at the lower part here, we have Bharatvarsha. And this mountain chain, just to the north of Bharatvarsha, is the Himalayas of Jambudweep. Here's another good picture of Jambudweep also. So here we have one representation that tries to show how a physical Earth could be situated relative to a physical Bhumandala and Jambudweep. So here we have the Earth globe mounted on a mountain, which is extending up from Bharatakhanda, or Bharatvarsha. So this is one idea. But of course there are problems with this. And even if you have it floating in space, and you don't have this mountain to support it, you still have the problem of, well, what happens when you look out and all these gigantic mountains are right next to the Earth? You should be able to see them, but obviously we don't. In fact, I just have to point out this part of the caption of the picture. Why do we not see the lands? It is not the Lord's will. An attempt may be made. Beyond this Bharatakhanda, we may see or may not see, with others as a witness. So we go to Jai Singh. So this is two views of Jai Singh's globe. In one view you can see the mountains of Jambudweep, except now they're curved because they're being wrapped around a sphere. And this area at the bottom right here is Bharatvarsha. And here we're seeing the southern hemisphere, and these successive rings are the dweepas and oceans of Bhumandala. So basically this globe represents Bhumandala. will show a little more detail. Oh, I didn't mention this one, but it's kind of interesting. Here we have Bhumandala. We have Jambudvip represented as a lotus flower. It's often referred to as a lotus. And then again, down below the southern in the southern hemisphere, we have the alternating dvipas and oceans of Bhumandala. So there are several globes like this in India. Let me see now. I was looking for place names. So here we have a close-up view of Jai Singh's globe. This arc-shaped mountain here, namely this one, this is the Himalayan mountain range. Then beyond that, there's the Himakuta mountain, the Nishada mountain. This is all precisely Jambudvip. Here, there's Kashmir, there's Delhi, Agra, Prayag, Kashi, there's Jagannath. These are all very familiar names from India. Then when you go over the Himalayan mountain range, going on the eastern side, here's Chin and Mahachin, which would correspond to China. And going on the western side, here is Turkan, Khorasan, and Makka, which is actually Mecca. So that's how the earth is being represented as Bhumandala. And if you go south of the equator, you come here to the Lavana Samudra, the ocean of salt, and then Plakshadweep, and the Ikshu Samudra, the ocean of sugarcane juice, Shalmali Dweep. These are all features of Bhumandala. So indeed, this is Bhumandala. And the only other thing I mentioned was the astrolabe. That's the astrolabe. Okay, well, here we have a picture of an astrolabe. So this flat plate is a stereographic projection of the Earth globe, and that makes it a convenient device for doing calculations. It's sort of a laptop of its time in history. Whoops, I'll move this out of the way. Basically, the astrolabe shows that there's meaning to representing an Earth globe as a flat disk. In this case, as a computational device. Actually, it's kind of interesting. This circle right here, the off-centered circle, is the orbit of the Sun. So basically, this tells where the Sun will be directly overhead anywhere at any time in the course of its motion, which is useful for navigation.
Just asking for a big ton of questions, you know, which is, I mean, in one sense it's good, but it's also, you know, like a little unfulfilling for people who want a lot of, you know, dope right away on this subject.
One more Mistress of the Sacred Universe by the CD.
Right.
What in the world is the purpose of having these two different representations?
So
why do these two representations exist? Why do making things more complicated for everybody to try and understand the structure of the cosmos?
Really bright.
The purpose behind it. It's like you just opened another Pandora's box of possibilities in there.
Well, there are a lot of questions, but if we just limit ourselves to what is presented here,
right,
without a doubt, that globe is Bhumandala.
Yeah.
Because it's got all the features of Bhumandala.
So why is this?
I mean, I don't need to say it. You're interested in the subject matter of this CD.
What is more important? What is more important to focus on? No, the globe, and we know it, and as the scientists see it.
So if you're interested in the subject matter of this text, you can get Mysteries of the Sacred Universe for more in-depth information.
We find it described as a plane.
If you're interested in the subject matter,
we find, for example, in the Siddhanta Shiromani,
Mysteries of the Sacred Universe,
that it's a globe.
In-depth information.
And what could possibly be the relation between a plane and a globe?
Right.
See, it's the same. My point here, which I think you can say, even if you can't answer these other questions and you simply remain bewildered as to why they would do it, still, they plainly did it. They represented Bhumandala, first of all, as a plane in the text of the Bhagavatam, and Bhumandala is also represented as a globe, as shown by this globe by commissioned by Jai Singh. So, it is a plane and it is a globe. And those are two different interpretations of the same textual material.
Mm.
Now, what possible reason could they have for doing something like that?
Right.
And Cloetzli argues that, in fact, the plane is an astrolabe model. So he's saying they start out with the globe, and from the globe, they come to the plane. But, of course, that still doesn't explain a number of different curious points. For example, why make the mountains so big in the plane representation? They wouldn't have to be. You could make them any size you wanted as far as the representation is concerned. So, basically, what I suggested in my book, and this requires a lot more detailed discussion, but basically, I propose that the huge mountain ranges and other features such as the gigantic trees and so on that you find in Jambudvipa, according to the fifth canto, these refer to a heavenly realm.
Hmm.
Now you know that if you go into the Himalayan mountains, you can find a gateway into other dimensions. You can go into the realm of the demigods. There's so many stories like that. For example, even the story I got from that Prem Yogi in India years ago about what is it called? Kalapagram. It's the place where the kings wait out the Kali Yuga so that they can take up their kingship again in the beginning of the next Satya Yuga. And so that Prem Yogi said that he had a friend who tried to go visit Kalapagram. Apparently yogis used to do that kind of thing, or probably they still do. And this yogi tried very hard to get into Kalapagram. He engaged in severe austerities, sitting in the snow of the Himalayas, and bathing up to his neck in freezing ice-cold lakes, doing tapa, and so on. So he was doing all this. And finally, he was able to enter into Kalapagram, which was a beautiful paradise with flowers. The walkways were made of some kind of translucent, very beautiful jewel-like stone. There were all kinds of flowers and so forth, beautiful climate. And these gigantic figures were sitting there in a yoga posture. And they said to him, because you wanted to come here so badly, we've let you have a glimpse of this place, but you're so contaminated that you could not possibly stay here. So you must go.
Oh, so you're the source of that story. I was just telling that story to somebody not long ago.
Yeah, I got it from Prem Yogi.
Huh.
But that illustrates the idea. First of all, these figures of the yogis who were sitting there were very large,
right.
Much bigger than ordinary people. So you have the idea that if you go into the Himalayas, or probably up into Tibet, in those different mountain ranges, you can enter through a gateway into another dimension. For example, Shambhala is supposed to be there.
Hmm.
Shambhala, interestingly enough, is the place where Kalki is going to be born, according to the Bhagavatam.
But
it's also Buddhist.
Well, the Buddhists believe in Shambhala.
Right.
That you're talking about Hilton's Shangri-La? Isn't that the same?
Well, Shangri-La is another one of these similar realms.
Right.
But As far as ones mentioned by the Bhagavatam are concerned, there's Kalapagram, and there's Shambhala. Of course, there's a huge cult following around Shambhala. And what was his name? That Redfield guy who wrote the Celestine Prophecy? Yeah, he also wrote a book about finding your way into Shambhala. He had some... in his books, he always has the bad guys and the good guys. So the bad guys were these communist Chinese military types, sort of CIA-type operatives. And they were always trying to wreak havoc and destroy all knowledge of the spiritual reality. It's up somewhere in Tibet. I don't know if it's in the Himalayas or... I don't know exactly where it is. But the same idea is there. You enter into this beautiful transcendental place by entering into some sort of gateway up in that region of the world. Right, there could be other gateways, but certainly... So that's one idea of what the very large mountains and so forth in Jambudweep represent.
And Sumeru?
Sumeru? Well, Sumeru is part of it. You see, Sumeru serves different functions in different interpretations. For example, in the Bhagavatam description, Sumeru is 84,000 yojanas tall. So it sticks up out of Jambudweep about this far. If this circle represents Jambudweep, Sumeru is like this. So it's really gigantic. And it's an inverted cone. Different Puranas give different descriptions, though. In some of them, it's a polygon with different numbers of sides. In some of them, it's square.
Why are these different descriptions there?
Well, people...
I mean, are they seeing this... in some kind of mystical fashion, everybody has a different take on it?
It's hard to say.
It's
because, you know, and to what extent do people just change ideas at whimsy?
Right, I mean, it would appear that we have absolutely no access to really nailing down how all this works.
Well,
at least in this
you
plane.
Can try and find Prem Yogi and talk to Prem Swami. He was quite a character. I think Prabhupada gave him first, second initiation and sannyas in one ceremony. He was an interesting character. But in any case, so that's one idea of what the huge dimensions of Jambudweep could represent. I did a calculation there. There was one description of Lord Shiva sitting under a tree, and the size of the tree was given.
Right.
And assuming that Lord Shiva was to the tree, as an ordinary person is to an ordinary tree, in a rough approximation, I came to the conclusion that if Lord Shiva was standing so that his feet were was laying on the earth with his feet in southern France, his head would be up in Scotland. In other words, he'd be a bit big. But that relates to the idea we always present of saying that we are to the demigods as some ants at our feet are to us. So that's one possibility concerning, for example, in the out-of-body experiences, where do people go? If they go down a tunnel into some world of light and they meet beings there. So where is that?
Right.
So there are all kinds of possibilities. So you see, that's another meaning for... That is a meaning for Jambudweep. See, another meaning for Jambudweep is it's the northern hemisphere of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to say, looking at the way the mountains are laid out, the only part there that is really realistic is the part around India. Because if you follow the mountain ranges around, you don't find anything like North America or Siberia, or anything like that. So, but still, what's being represented there is the geography of the northern hemisphere. Mount Meru, then, is the North Pole. So, according to that, there's a literal North Pole. Hmm. But it's not 84,000 yojanas high, because the whole Earth is just 8,000 miles across. The hemisphere of northern hemisphere of the Earth is another meaning of Jamadweep. Now, a third meaning of Jamadweep is if you take a region of Asia, and there's a map in on the CD somewhere, but I'll just describe it. Basically, it's oval in shape. It goes from northern India up through Tibet and so on into Siberia on a north-south axis. And it goes from the Caspian Sea region across to China on an east-west axis. So that region is Jamadweep. And the reason for saying so is studies have been made of the Puranas, in which, for example, the Vayu Purana and the Matsya Purana have a lot more geographical detail than the Bhagavatam does.
Mm-hmm.
And scholars have studied this and shown that there's a pretty good correlation between the descriptions in these Puranas of the geography of that region of the earth and the actual geography. But in that case, you could say, well, what is Mount Meru? Well, Mount Meru lies roughly in the Pamir Mountain region, which is in the very northern tip of Pakistan. So that would be the Mount Meru in that picture. So that's another meaning of Jamadweep. And if you try and say that those are referring to exactly the same thing, then you'd wind up putting the North Pole in Pakistan, which wouldn't work very well. But actually, those are two different interpretations. And of course, there's the whole orbit interpretation of Bhumandala as a disk, which is another subject in its own right. So it would appear that whoever wrote the fifth canto introduced all kinds of different ideas that are sort of juxtaposed in the text, leaving it open to a wide variety of interpretations.
Do you have a theory as to why they would present the information that way?
Well, it's curious. I don't really know why they would do it. I do know that people used to do that, and there's precedent for looking at the Bhagavatam in that way. For example, the Atmarama verse, Lord Chaitanya generated systematically a whole series of interpretations of the Atmarama verse for Swayam Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya. Because Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya himself was trying to give different interpretations of the verse, but his interpretations were rather awkward. They didn't really fit very well.
Mm-hmm.
So Lord Chaitanya said, okay, I'll show you how you can really do it. And he rattled off a whole series of very beautiful interpretations. There's precedent for that in Vedic literature.